This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
Hello, this is a message from Terry and Rona, who are Archers and Dumpty Dum fans from Guernsey. Recently on our holiday at Pyramid Lake in Jasper, we recorded this for you.
Lucy, do you see the? Did you hear the joy in people's voices there?
They just climbed a sodding mountain as well. They're very vigorous.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's altitude sickness. They've just got to be too lally.
Well, they sounded like happy Dumpty Dummers, unlike that, miserable like, lot in New York last week. Everyone's coming to an end.
But thing is, we did it before we'd had a drink. If we'd done it at the end, it would have been like the Folie Bergère, no doubt.
Well, there you go. There's a fundamental error made there.
Yeah.
One thing I never make on my meetups, just saying.
Right.
Folks, this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the jolly family board game that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the screaming Monopoly tantrum that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Escape from Atlantis, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum was sent in by Kerry and Rona, who interrupted their very own holiday to record it. And we thank them for that, don't we, Luce?
We do. Yes.
Now, Lucy, any of our listeners would like to send us in a Dumpty Dum or become a quarter-inner, how can they do that?
If you would like to leave us your thoughts or a plot prediction, sing us a Dumpty Dum or describe your prosperous, idyllic home and business-owning family as very unlucky, leave us a message on SpeakPipe via DumptyDum.com or call us on 0203-031-3105. This week, we need to thank Shambridge for her amazing voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Cosmo for his episode roundups, and to Derek for Alone in the Back Bedroom. Derek is supporting Jazza in giving up smoking. Derek is an ex-smoker himself and was never happier than when he had his lips round and it was Cuban.
Sorry, I laughed out of turn. I read ahead. Sorry.
That's what Robert does. He suddenly goes, like this, like, makes me jump. I don't know what. He says, I'm just reading.
On this week's show, folks, we only have 3 calls, or even 2.
It's because they all peak too soon, you see. They all rang in last week and then they're all too exhausted to ring in again this week.
Well, what I have to do, I feel like a whip in the House of Commons.
I know.
I have to whip callers into shape. Well, come on, get into those lobby rooms. I mean, get on the calls and whatever. Yeah, it's like, come on, people. We've only been doing this approximately 250 times. You know the drill. You know that we record on either Mondays or Tuesdays. So you've got the weekend when you haven't got a shed load of things on, you know, you've got a Sunday afternoon. Why don't people just call in on Sunday afternoon, Lucy?
I don't know.
Because the other thing is
they're
about
asleep,
calling on,
I should think.
Doing what?
Asleep.
On a Sunday afternoon. That's
yes.
What Sunday nights are invented for. No,
Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon
is the nice nap after your Sunday.
So Well, when do you have your constitutional?
You have your constitutional straight after lunch, and then you come back and say, I'll just have a cup of tea, put the kettle on, you make a cup of tea, and then fall asleep while it goes cold next to you. That's what you do.
But then when do you watch Sunday afternoon football?
You don't.
Or when do you watch that movie with the family on Netflix?
Well, you can go to sleep while they're watching it. That's what I do.
Oh, I tell you what, I saw Venom last night in the cinema.
That's got appalling reviews. What was it like?
Oh, Lucy, I had such a great sleep. I'm telling you, what a pile of rubbish. I recommend it for anyone who's having trouble sleeping. Oh, God. And you know me, I love a superhero film. I don't understand, because I read that it had bad reviews. And also, I've seen that, oh, it's actually not that bad. And because it's superheroes, you know, I just trot along just on principle. But I'm honest, though. I'm an honest fanboy. When it's rubbish, it's rubbish. And boy, oh, boy, I slept through easily two-thirds of that. Thank you for that. You know, Everyman Theatre, you know, it was worth every penny. I slept so soundly. Good grief, it was bad.
With the duvet and the pillow and the...
Oh, no, exactly, because it's an Everyman, so it really are comfy seats, yeah, and they bring you your food to your table and everything. I ate the food, and I just went, right, I'm sleeping. Thank you. Woke up just as the credits were going up. It was superb. What an appalling film, folks. And the thing is, that Tom Hardy, he normally does good stuff.
Yeah, but he probably needed a new conservatory or something, didn't he?
hardly likely, but loose goodness. We've had a lovely diversion, but on this week's episode we have calls from Vicky. Oh, I love Vicky Cole. Oh,
I know.
Did you see a little face at the do and everything? Oh, she's so lovely. And Amy Gilbert, who I love equally. But first, before all of that good stuff, you need to brace yourself, folks. You need to like grab onto your sofas. It's our Lucy and our week in Ambridge.
We began the week with Adam's throbbing voice. No, I can't have another rasher of bacon, Ian. I haven't got time. This was followed rather unpleasantly by Monty Snell doing his own ginormous Snell on the green, which was spotted by Pat. Robert hurried to wrestle it into a plastic bag before Pat tried to knit it. Well, this week we found out who runs Lower Loxley. Geraldine. Jesus, she's a busy woman. She trims back the treetop walk, organises children's treasure hunts, sprays the grapes, cuts Bert's corns. Does she sleep? Or does she just wander Lower Loxley wearing a fluorescent vest, slashing randomly at things with a scythe while frantically typing one-handed on her laptop? And now, the week's biggest storyline. Harassment likes board games. He wants Kenton and Jolene to play the board game with him. Kenton and Jolene don't want to play the board game with Harassment. Can you spell anodyne? The game is called Escape from Atlantis. You all have to dress up in a wetsuit and snorkel so Kenton won't need to change. Kenton has apparently been scarred by memories of his siblings sat around the writing desk, David throwing tantrums and storming off to the attic when no one will let him be the racing car, Elizabeth demanding a solicitor when she didn't get the results she wanted, Kenton reading the rules through a crackly PA system, and Shula announcing that she'd suddenly completely gone off the game, but she couldn't quite explain why. Slowly driving Jenny mad, hanging round home farm like a fart in a phone box. Stop whinging, Brian. Have you played your PlayStation? Go and play golf. See if one of your friends wants to play. No, not Mandy Beesman. You can help me chop the vegetables if you promise to be careful. In the end, Brian got so bored, he remembered Brexit, and him and David went to a lecture on it. The upshot of which appeared to be that Brexit was either going to be very, very bad or very, very good. Well done, BBC. Do you remember at primary school when you had 15 minutes morning playtime, and if you played an imaginary game, it took you so long to establish all the rules and I'll be this and you be that, and then the bell went and you'd used up the whole playtime? That's a Bridge Farm planning meeting, that is. They've now decided, based on, again, absolutely sod all, to make drinks out of nuts. Yes. Not fruits, the nice, squishy, juicy things. Or even cows, the things that actually make the drink come out of them ready drinkable. But the hard, dehydrated, knobbly things. Perfect. Tom has asked if he can bring Natasha along to play the planning meeting game, and if that doesn't have her sprinting back to the Brecon Beacons, nothing will. Jill had an away day with Carol Toboggan. They went to see a play called Messiah, at which Jill mystifyingly laughed all the way through, apparently, so that must have been nice for all the Christians in the audience. Her homecoming was marred by the discovery that the charitable Josh had killed all her chickens. Josh seemed more concerned about this than Jill did herself, but this is possibly because he was already quite distressed, having come across his father ambling around the village carrying a bin bag full of decapitated chickens. The rest of the family seemed adamant that Hootie was devastated at the loss of her flock. As far as I could tell, she was blithely unconcerned. "She's hiding it! She's in shock!" said David over the noise of Jill singing Free at Last. "I think it's the best thing, really," said Jill. So immediately they all decided that they had to rebuild the chicken house, buy her new chickens, and generally not listen to what she'd just said. Anyway, Hootie had bigger things on her mind, namely her crazed youngest child, who is, as we speak, writing to the European Court of Human Rights and trying to persuade Freddie that if he wears a Hawaiian-style shirt and marries Winnie Mandela, he'd stand a better chance of getting out. The remaining Archer children huddled together in the airing cupboard at Brookfield to have a quiet word about Elizabeth until Jill threw the door open and shouted, "Aha! Found you! No, I don't want any more bloody chickens." Anyway, the upshot was they'd decided to have a quiet word with Geraldine, of course, while she's retiling the orangery. Turns out, too, everyone in Ambridge is an erstwhile smoker. Linda, Hannah. Jazzer asked Hannah which cigarette she missed most. "The one after sex," she said. "I was on 20 a day.
20, that's good. That's good. Check that.
She invited Jazz around to play games with her, and after he left, asked if she could have a quick go on Tom's joystick. Does she never just want to have a quiet night watching Bake Off? And the mystery remains about what theatrical riot Linda is planning. "I know I shouldn't care, but I've fallen for it, and I do. My money's on Animal Farm. Class war. Chris Carter can strip down and play the horse. Brian can play the capitalist pig. As long as whoever's playing the chicken steers clear of Josh, it should all be fine." And finally, Auntie Cardboard is safely installed in the laurels with its adaptations and its fully flushing lavatories, so that's a relief. "She settled in after she spotted someone she recognised in the lounge," said Lillian. "It was Kathy Perks. She'd gone in there 18 months ago to drop some leaflets off about the aqua aerobics and they wouldn't let her back out. 'I'm the manager of Gay Grables,' she keeps saying. And they just say, 'Of course you are, love. Let's pop your cardigan on and you can go and talk to Irene. She says she's Carol Vorderman.' The end."
Oh, you know what? That was good this week. Much more enjoyable than last week. Well done. I did review last week's, Lucy. Oh, no. On second hearing, didn't hold up. But this one, triumph. Utter triumph. Talking about old
people. You're so horrible. Talking about what?
It's the only thing I've approached into a bit of a gag on this show. talking about old people. Right? Mm. I didn't know this was a thing, right? Well, you know when people get dementia?
Yeah.
The first thing that goes is their short-term memory.
Yeah.
And then their inhibitions.
Yeah.
So whatever comes onto their mind, they just say it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
But there's a real problem with people in early onset of Alzheimer's dementia and them being outrageously sexual.
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Well, it's all part of disinhibition, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it makes complete and utter sense. But if you don't have to think about this stuff, well, why would you think about it?
Mm.
There are actually special wards and beds for people like this. It's just, you know, the things that the poor older folk have to go through and stuff. You know, your dignity just gets stripped away with this horrible, horrible, horrible disease.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not going on in the laurels, though. Not with our Auntie Chris.
I don't think anyone has sex in Ambridge apart from Hannah. So I don't think it's happening in the old people's home.
No, there's lots of sex in Ambridge. you know, apart from Tom and Hannah, I think Robert and Linda, you know, they still have Congress, don't they?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
There's Neil and Susan. There's loads of it.
Well, that's two people. Yeah.
Well, no, there's three. I'm just giving you three couples. I tell you, the one couple which feels totally devoid of any sexual passion or frisson is Ian and what's his face?
Adam.
Ian and Adam. You never
Can I just say, listeners, before we started this show, Royfield was quietly sort of, we were chatting about what had happened in the week, and we mentioned Adam Macy, and he went, "Bloody Adam Macy, I don't give a shit what happens to him."
Shut up!
He said he's an old bore. He said, "You've got a real thing about Adam."
Oh no! Don't say that. I'm trying to get the actor on the show list.
Well, you didn't say the actor was a real bore. You said Adam was.
Yeah, there is nothing going on there.
As long as you don't say, oh, Adam's always been one of our favourites, because that would be a palpable lie. So, yeah.
No. I'll be honest and I'll say, you know, I'll be polite and I'll say, you divide opinion, you know. That.
People can't decide whether they hate you or loathe you.
Or whether you just bore them all to sleep. Like a good Venom movie.
Yeah,
right. Adam and the Black Grass. Who cares about that? Now, Elizabeth's frustrated search for the solicitors. Stop with you. Right. That was good, because it is the one thing which is actually keeping her going. And she does say, I don't know, Jill or somebody says that, you know. She needs that, doesn't she? Last week I said I was really hard on some character, and I forgot to say I was really hard on Elizabeth as well, because she did lose her hubby. You know, I know she's in a big stately pile and she's got shed loads of cash and stuff, but she did love Nigel. She did lose him. She has tried her best to be a mother, and the kids have slightly gone off the rails. At least one of them has anyway. And it's all just, you know, weighing somewhat heavily on her. And this is what's keeping her going.
An email from Welsh Witch about it.
Oh, yeah. Does she say exactly the same thing?
No, she said, I have a little bit of sympathy for her, having been in a similar position myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I did go into helicopter parent mode. Yes, I did explore all possibilities, but at least I knew when I was being told that it was a hopeless case. Elizabeth seems to be deaf and blind to the neglect that Lower Loxley seems to be suffering at the moment.
Well, there are enough minions, like Geraldine has just come out of the woodwork, to keep that business going. So I wouldn't worry about Lower Loxley massively.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if the staff are noticing that things are going wrong, like Bert said, a tour group was booked in and two turned up at once and then no one turned up for the first one, and no one's, you know, if no one sprays the grapes and the grapes get mould or mildewy stuff and then they can't make the wine. So she's absolutely living in the moment, because with a business like Lower Loxley, any event business, you have to think at least a year or 2 years ahead.
That is true. You know, she needs to employ Roy. Get Roy back. He'll sort it out for her.
Yeah. Where is Roy?
He's at the health club.
Yeah. No, I mean, why haven't we heard from him?
It's probably in
And
some
what's happening about the pregnancy thing? He's still trying to get Skype to connect. Hello? Lexi? Hello? I think because for her, every minute longer that Freddie is in prison, she's imagining worse and worse and worse things. She can't think any further than getting him out. So, you know, talking about Christmas, talking about, you know, the most she got to forward planning was when she said to Oliver, the good thing about children is that they don't drink alcohol. And I thought, to be honest, if I was trapped on the treetop walk at Lower Loxley, even if I was six, I'd want a fairly stiff Smirnoff with me. But anyway, and that's, you know, that at the moment, everything she's thinking, like, she's thinking immediately for Freddie, and she's thinking about a month ahead for Lower Loxley. But for that business not to collapse completely, it needs to be. So I think Lily will end up chucking up her course and will come back and help Elizabeth take over the business.
I think that is a stunning plot prediction.
In fact, we have another plot prediction.
Goodness.
Slightly more alarming, from Beth from Rhode Island, who said, I predict the following sequence of events. Lily becomes pregnant with twins. Russ abandons her for someone younger and richer. Using the connections he has met, this gets a bit fanciful now.
Younger.
Using the connections he's made while being locked up, Freddie puts out a hit on Russ. Russ turns up dead in Ambridge, mysteriously tied up in the long lost Bunting. Harrison receives an anonymous message giving him enough information to arrest Ellis for the murder and the theft of the Bunting. Ellis is locked up for 20 years despite protesting his innocence. Harrison is a hero and Ambridge's crime clearance rates have never looked so good. Freddie is heard in the background quietly laughing to himself. Well, Elizabeth, I think you've possibly watched one too many episodes of a police procedural, but I do think that Lily getting pregnant or Russ abandoning her, either or, is probably quite likely. And I do think that she's going to come back and run Lower Loxley while Elizabeth has a quiet nervous breakdown.
You know,
probably quite a noisy nervous breakdown. Yes. Brilliant.
I always say each week, you know, off mic, I say, oh, you're so awesome. You're so clever. You're so funny. But you have just put your proper clever hat and clever boots on there, haven't you? Because I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
But you know, every single one of my plot predictions, how long did I go on for the last the last word of the Christmas episode being at me Christmas pusscat? And it never happened. So, you know. I held out for that. For months I was banging on about that.
This one feels good. Because why we had all this foreshadowing with her, with Lily being so good running the business. She understands it inside out. Arguably, intuitively, much more than her mother.
Yeah.
By the way, why are they still doing that stupid wine? That was all just a little plaything of Nigel's, wasn't it?
I know. I don't know. Well, I suppose once you've got all the grapes, you've got to do something with them. I suppose it's a gimmick. I mean, are they still allowed to do that, though, with the loss of the license?
Huh. Well done. You might have spotted a little bit of a flaw there in the script writer's shenanigans. Well done.
I'm sure I haven't. Listen, we'll just wait. We'll just wait now for Kerry to tweet us.
You've now put on your clever gloves. Well done. Right now.
I've got clever gloves and a clever hat.
This yeah, and clever boots.
I have a whole clever outfit. Clever
boots. Wearing nothing else, but anyway.
How do you know? Have I left the camera on again?
Yeah, exactly. Now, I all that Elizabeth stuff. Just a slight extension to what I said last week, and I won't dwell on it, but we did see all the siblings coming together in a way that a good, decent extended family would. Us people that live in extended families like all that stuff. It's very good. Move on from that. Now,
I have a big issue I need to talk about.
Ooh,
and you didn't remind me, but I've remembered anyway. No, it's not. No, it's not Brexit.
Were you part of the 700,000?
I wasn't, actually. No.
Why not?
Because my
country's future is hanging in the balance and you weren't there.
My son went to his climbing class and did a shoulder stand and went sideways on his neck and couldn't move his head. Fair. So I was slightly anxious.
Brexit had to wait.
Yes, that I had a son with an extendable neck, which wasn't ideal. But anyway, he's now fine. You know Inkbarrow, where the Bull pub is? It's near the. Yes. It's near where they record. It's near the mailbox. It's near where they record the Archers. And it's a little village. Is it a village or? Yes, it's a village, isn't it? Called Inkbarrow. Yeah. Well, guess what the name of the doctor's surgery is in Inkbarrow?
The Laurels, the Stables.
Grey Gables.
You'll stop it.
No.
How believable is that really? Are you just making that stuff up now,
nope.
Lucy?
I can't publish it officially, but I can send you the picture of the doctor that is the one of the GPs at the Gay Grables Doctor Surgery in Inkbarrow.
Is he Northern?
She? No.
Is the doctor Northern?
No, she isn't. I'm not letting you get away with it.
No, I said he, not because I think that all doctors should be male. It's because our doctor is male. That's right. The reason why I said that. Don't think that I'm that, which reminds me, right? Mm. Now, because I know we slightly have to fill in this episode, right? So.
No, we don't. I haven't done my other big issue yet. I've got loads
to say. Okay, whilst you're doing that. Lucy, I just happened to be minding my own business the other day. And as you do a bit of vanity searching, right?
Do you?
Well, come on, we've all done it. Stop it, right? You can't work in the media and not say, I'm going to have a look and see what people have said about what me or what I do. We've all done it.
I genuinely haven't, but anyway. Sorry, but I haven't.
Well, every now
and then. Anyway, carry on. So what happened?
So I was minding my own business, doing a little search for Dumpty Dum. Yeah. And I was horrified, right? And then I did burst out laughing somewhat. Right, I'm just going to this. Just bear with me. I really should have set this up before. But this show is cobbled together at the best of times. And it's just a random, disjointed collection of thoughts. And then, yeah, so here I am, right? Minding my own business. Let's have a look and see what people have been saying about the old Dumpty Dum. And then, like, I was having a looking at our reviews. Lucy, we've got reviews from Germany, Japan, the States, New Zealand, Australia. It's like, it's bloody hell. You look at our reviews and it's like the UN Security Council for countries.
Wow.
It really is impressive because a little flag comes up next to when that person's written a review, right? So from the United States, 2 out of 10, Jezebel. Persistent problem. R. Brown is one of those men who doesn't realise or care he's a deep-down misogynist. It's a shame, because Lucy is fun to listen to. She needs a less chauvinist co-host.
Hear, hear!
I couldn't agree with you more, Jezebel. I'm taking myself off for some counselling, I'm telling you. I am part of the patriarchy and proud, and, like, you know, it needs to be knocked out of me. Jezebel, thank you for saying what other listeners wouldn't.
Calling it out, Jezebel.
Yeah, exactly. Well done. Thank you for that, Jezebel. Right. I'm now...
Can I do my thing now?
Yes, go on. You do your thing.
Okay. Right. I am worried about saying this.
Oh, God.
Okay, I'm going to say it anyway.
All right.
Everybody says that Hannah... I know she, you know, she's rude and she's not very nice, but there's her, and I did this big blah, 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 last week about how good it is that she's so assertive sexually and she's relaxed about it and she's genuinely, you know, at peace with herself and what she wants in terms of her sex life as a woman and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something really chiming wrong about what she did with,
Jazza. Yeah.
When she... there was just something really manipulative about it. It hadn't crossed Tom's mind that Jazza might still have a thing for Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
So she then introduced that into Tom's mind, and there was no need to do that. She could have just gone and had a quiet word with Jazza. She made it very clear to Jazza that he wasn't wanted anymore now Tom was there. I think she plays power games. And that's not proper sexual assertiveness. That's just being a cow, basically. And but there was something, that level of manipulation was quite, I didn't like it. There was a big alarm bell ringing and I really, really didn't like it. And I can't tell whether, I'm hoping that's not me being unable to deal with a sexually assertive woman. I really don't think it is. I hope it isn't, for goodness sake. But I hope it's not just that I've read the scene wrong because of something I saw in the scene that wasn't there.
You didn't. You read it spot on. And
did you think so too?
I thought it was... let's say at best not nice, at my most polite, the way that as soon as Tom walked in, then all of a sudden she wanted to get rid of Jazza.
Yeah.
You know, she spent the whole evening with him. It's not as if he was like hitting on her or anything that. He was just being pleasant. There he was. Then all of a sudden Tom comes in and it's case, oh yeah, I'm tired now. Bye-bye. And actually, I think they are playing a blinder with the character of Hannah. So they've got us all cheering from the sidelines saying she's sexually confident and whatever. But actually, she feels much more for Tom than she's letting on. I'm not saying she's in love with him or anything like that. But there is more going on her side. Because if this is just a case of, well, this is just friends with benefits, you can stop up till all hours, play your game with Jazza, and then you just tap on Tom's door at 1 o'clock in the morning, jump in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, she actually likes Tom. She likes to spend time with Tom.
Yeah.
And also
she could be one of those people. It's not just women, it's people that want, they don't mind whether the person actually is into them or not. No, they don't, their own feelings about the person are immaterial. The important thing is that the person wants them, and they'll do anything to keep that going.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, that just having attention in and of itself is a goal, isn't it?
But also there's something really rotten about saying to someone else that you're intimate with, oh, that person fancies me. Or even, in this case, I'm he used to fancy me. Well, I can't tell now whether he still fancies me or not. And you think, don't talk about it. It's not Tom's business. That's between you and Jazza. And, you know, you don't talk about it. It's humiliating for the other person, isn't it?
I'm somewhat more, on the fence about that, because you could argue that it's just a certain level of openness, just like she can say to Tom, well, I fancy, who was that bloke, Rowan or whatever the heck his name was, can't remember. And then Tom's kind of going after Natasha. It's on that level of just, I'm just being honest and whatever. So
no, but she's not, because she's, if you fancy someone and they don't fancy you, mm-hmm. you are in the vulnerable position. And as the person in the powerful position, i.e. the person being fancied, if you're a decent human being, you respect the fact that the person fancies you and you can't do anything about it because you don't fancy them. So you're just nice to them, but you make the position very clear. You don't gossip about it with other people.
Well, I don't know. That's a bit shitty, I think. Gossiping about it. I think it was a throwaway, I don't know if throwaway is the right word. It was a comment to Tom.
It wasn't throwaway. It was absolutely calculated.
No, it wasn't. And I pulled that back. But it was I don't know. All I do know is that the very fact that she parceled Jazza out of there, toot sweet, tells me you like spending time with Tom in and out of the sack.
Yeah.
And there is much more feeling, emotion going on there, even though Tom might just be, available nookie-age. And whatever, but there's much more going on. And it painted her out to be a colder and more cynical person, other than, hey, I'm just a liberated woman in my late 20s, mm-hmm. early 30s, and I can be a stereotypical guy, inverted commas, in that way. There's much more going on. And I think that the script writers are probably, depending on where this goes, playing a blinder with this. Because, as I said, we all cheer from the sidelines because she's sexually liberated and confident, but none of us like her.
No.
You know, we're not going, whoop-de-doo, you go for it, girl. We go, but we don't like you.
Yeah. You keep away from Neil. You keep away from
exactly. Yes. You know, having to go at poor Emma and whatever, and she's been in the village all of her life just wanting a home. Yeah. And who the hell are you just waltzing in? And when we were at the Dumby Dum Live, Kerry misdirected us when he said we were brought in the character of Hannah and she wasn't, we didn't think she was going to be disliked. The story just turned out that way. I think it was deliberate. I think they set out to bring in a confident woman which can play up to all of our sensibilities and say, yay, go for it, girl, but then actually make her subtly unlikable.
Yeah, yeah.
Because actually, literally the first thing she did, remember, was to reject Jazza. Jazza's heard she was back in the village.
Yeah.
You know, and what would have made us love her more than her saying, all right, Jazza, let's give it a go.
Yeah.
Kerry's a liar. I'm never going to have him on the show again, Lucy. And I hope you're listening, Mr. Davies. Right, so...
the thing about this is that we don't take it personally, eh, Roy? We're going to do some calls,
Yeah, you know what? We best add, because I'm still reeling from me being a deep-down misogynist, I'd go off and cry somewhere. All right, then let's have a bit of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Let's go to the Isle of Wight, or is it Sri Lanka? Both of them are islands, I suppose.
Hi, everybody. This is Vicky Cole. I did send an email last week, but it may have got lost if the website was misbehaving. It was just saying thank you, thank you, thank you for the Birmingham weekend. I loved it. It was so nice to see some old friends and make some new ones. And it was just wonderful to be there. Thank you very, very much. I did actually then listen to the podcast of the recording, and I did pick up a few things that I'd missed when it was live. So do go back and have another listen if you haven't. It was great. Thank you. So, Josh, I think David went completely over the top to Josh about the milking with Johnny, just out of all proportion. And the only thing I can think of is that maybe this is so that when it was compounded by everybody being cross with him about the hens, that Josh is going to build up a sort of simmering resentment against everybody, and it will spur him on to doing something dramatic like leaving the farm. I don't know. I remember Josh being born. He is one day younger than my son. I remember being in hospital and listening to that episode very clearly. It was very hot, I think. The other thing that I am looking forward to, and I think is just that the seeds have been sown, is when they find out that Peggy is paying for Christine, because it's going to be very hard for them to make a fuss without looking heartless and money-grabbing. I think that's going to be quite entertaining when the time comes. Anyway, lots of love to everybody, and I'll call in again soon. Bye now.
What was that noise in the background? Is that the breaking waves?
I know, that's what I thought.
I think she just needs to get a new microphone on her laptop, to be fair. But let's call it the breaking waves, because we're still in that mood of of being enthralled to sound effects after doing the BBC tour stuff. So basically the destination of David and Josh is way off into the distance, isn't it? That actually, we've talked about this before, that David intrinsically doesn't trust Josh. His sensibilities are very different. And one thing that I took away from last week, with Josh talking about milking and the fact that, you know, he's been around cows very obviously since he was, you know, knee high, that actually he intrinsically does understand the farm, doesn't he? He does understand it. It's just that he is a businessman, inverted commas, you know, that he likes the cut and thrust of commerce. And that's what David doesn't trust.
Yeah. And also I think that Josh reminds David of Kenton. And David's transferred his ambivalence to Kenton to Josh.
I don't know about that, because Kenton was never interested in the farm. And
Josh isn't really. He's just interested in making money out of it.
No, Josh is interested in making money, but he does understand the farm. And I suppose, and maybe we need a Cosmo or a listener of an older vintage than me, but I'm guessing that Phil, David's father, was upset with Kenton because Kenton never showed any interest in being a farmer. And the Kenton is part of the reason why Kenton then ran away to the Navy and then travelled the world and stuff. He felt that he had to do this thing, was never really interested. And so there is some kind of link there, but I'm guessing, and again, Cosmo, please come and rescue me, or somebody else who can remember from the 60s and the 70s, that the difference is that Josh does understand the farm, does know about milking, etc., etc. It's just that he's got this other stuff which is more important, or at least as important for him, and it is all about tractors and whatever. So it's still agricultural, which isn't quite the same as Kenton, who just said, not interested in this stuff, I'm getting out of here. And then there's all this angst with Phil. So I don't think that's quite the same. I do love it, though. I absolutely do love it. And you can feel the you know, David bristle with just the very idea of Josh in a way that, as you've noted before, he doesn't do with Pip.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm going to press this button and hopefully this is the right caller.
Hello, Amy Gilbert, yes. Coming at you. Hello. On the old-fashioned telephonic device. I will try and keep this brief. But this is kind of about the Archers, but not about the Archers, if that makes any sense. Ha ha. No, it is, really. Basically, it was about the Archers extravaganza that was a couple of weeks ago. 2 weeks yesterday, in fact. I just wanted to say, again, how much I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And as did Topsy, a.k.a. Louise, I don't think, Louise, you will be known as anything other than Topsy now. Thank you for that, Royce. No, seriously, I want to thank everybody that was involved in that and made me and Louise, who are completely blind, just feel completely at home. Andrew Horn, Nancy Dickey, Christina, who else? Other Mary. No, not, is it Mary? Yeah. And the other one, Sean, and Royfield and Lucy, and Charlotte Martin, and Kerry, and everyone. But anyway, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I am so happy to be a part of this community, and I love you all. And it's 5:30 in the morning, and I'm going to go make a cup of tea now. But anyway, love you. Bye.
We love you more. We're so glad to have you as part of our community also, Amy, and you are an integral part. You come along to every live show that we do. And, you know, it's one thing for people to come along to a live show, but you've got various hurdles to negotiate, and you come all the way. Well, it's international travel. She comes from Scotland every time.
Yeah.
You know, so there is commitment. And then she brings a friend as well. And Topsy was lovely.
How is it your fault that Topsy's called Topsy?
That's her name on Twitter.
Oh.
So I just kept on calling her Topsy. And she kept on correcting me, saying, I do actually have a name. I said, do you, Topsy? So, yes, she is now forever Topsy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where were we? We were chatting about Brookers and Josh and his pops. Johnny. Johnny and Josh and the Milking Parlour. We did all of that. We've literally really done anything really worth talking about last week, haven't we? Oh, the Cider Club.
What the... Can they just tell us what this sodding play is now?
Mm. But do you really want to know?
Yes.
Do you?
So I can start getting annoyed about it.
You're already annoyed.
It's like Christmas tick list, make pudding, get really annoyed about Ambridge Christmas show. Tick. Write Christmas cards. Tick. Yes. Mm. No, I just can't bear the secrecy. And it is absolutely bonkers that anybody would be signing up to do a play that they didn't know what it was.
Hmm.
It could be hair and they all have to get their kit off or something. It's ridiculous.
Yes. It's not going to be though, is it? Because they kind of did that.
It'd be a bit pointless.
A few years ago when everyone had to...
Calendar cards,
yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Is that all the calls? Have we done them?
Yeah, we own, yeah.
So, oh, okay.
Hmm.
Should we do the social media now then?
You know what? Do you remember last week? When I talked about business wars, I didn't sell it correctly.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Because have you ever had a glass of Fanta?
Yeah.
Right. What did you reckon to it?
Never again.
Only the ones? Nothing wrong with it. Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
What is there to dislike about Fanta other than it's basically Nazi pop? I kid you not. I kid you not. You're right not to like Fanta. So the story goes, Luce.
Is that the name of your newest podcast, Nazi Pop?
No, actually, it's going to be Map Corner. I'm still working out the details. That's another thing, right? I'm getting hate from left, right and centre, Mr. Yokel Bear, right? Mr. Andrew Horn, Mr. Derek Fletcher / Greavesy. There's this campaign to get rid of my beloved Map Corner, and I care for it not a jot, right? But anyway, coming back onto business wars, right? So, two significant things. When you think of Americana, Lucy, right? Mm. Coca-Cola's there, isn't it? It's a symbol of Americana.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, two things about the war. Coca-Cola, basically all the GIs go off and Coke sales are like plummeting, and Coke petitions the American government and says, you know what we need to do? Give our boys a taste of America whilst they're fighting the Germans and the Japanese, etc. Give them all a glass of Coke, a bottle of Coke. and they petition hard and they say, and if we do this, no other soft drink can come anywhere near RGIs and whatever. So the whole idea of Coke being totally American, all things American, comes in the Second World War, and it gives a massive market share when all those GIs come home and all they want to do is drink Coke. Pure marketing dressed up as patriotism. But interesting side story, Fanta came about because, quite simply, just before the Second World War, Coke starts having these bottling plants all over the world, and it had a couple in Germany. War comes along, and Coca-Cola in the US has to disassociate itself from Coca-Cola in Germany. So they get cut off from all the syrups and everything. You know, they're not hardly going to be sending all this Coca-Cola ingredients over the Atlantic when we're at war with Germany. So the Germans are like, what the heck are we going to do? So they, because of all wartime deprivation and stuff, they don't have access to any good syrup and stuff. So they literally get the odds and the sods and the arse end of everything, throw it together.
And make Fanta.
And they call it Fanta. Exactly.
No.
Seriously.
And just dye it orange.
And it comes out a horrible brown colour at first off, right? And they go, well, you know what? This will have to do, right? So Fanta is as Nazi as a Volkswagen Beetle. Right. This is purely the Germans being cut off from world kind of global sugar and syrup trading. They throw everything together. The Germans have got nothing else to drink. They drink this Fanta. And then at the end of the war, they go, thank God for that. Coca-Cola takes over the bottling again and starts giving them Coke again. In the 1950s, somebody says, right, we need another brand to fight Pepsi. Let's have this Fanta thing back again. But the whole thing is that Fanta is the arse end of everything which could not be sold and drunk, and they threw it all together.
So it's like the drink equivalent of a really cheap sausage.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Carbonated sausage.
Ooh, I hope they're not listening, otherwise they'll sue us for libel.
Well, no.
Carbonated sausages.
You look, because I had to wiki this after hearing it, and it says it's ersatz, everything is what they made it out of, because they couldn't get their hands on anything. So when you drink Fanta, it's Hitler's drink. That's all I'm saying. It's like, don't drink it, Lucy. You're good. Well done for you for spotting that it was horrible.
I will carry on not drinking it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But I'm telling you, Business Wars, what a program. It is very, very, very good. You learn loads. Anyway, all right, now, considering we've just given Fanta a massive advert, or maybe we haven't actually, considering we said it's crap.
I don't think we've just described it as liquid sausage, so I don't think we've got much of an advert, really. I don't think they'll be switching their strap line.
Yes, you're probably right. Let's come back the other side. If you're in the United States and possibly the United Kingdom, you're probably going to hear an advert. If not, it's going to be straight onto a touch of the Yokel Bears.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Who has another go at me? Everyone's having a go at me this week. Anyway, here's Yokel Bear.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Yokel Bear here with the social media roundup. And I just want to say what a wonderful time I had going up to Birmingham and meeting some of you lovely people. You're all absolutely lovely. And I had a whale of a time. But anyway, on with the social media roundup. One of the things we've been talking about this week is Peggy bankrolling the entire village? Because, I mean, she seemed to be paying for anti-cardboard stay at the Laurels. Was she going to be buying the farmhouse off of Brian and Jenny? You know, is that going to happen? I don't know. So we asked, is she bankrolling the entire village? Well, poor Taylor has got a message directly for Peggy, which says, Peggy, if you're reading this, you've always been my favourite, and we need some new home kitchen appliances, please. Paul, aim higher. Aim higher. She's loaded. She's absolutely loaded. I reckon you might be able to get, you know, maybe a holiday in there as well. Bid high. That's what I say. Matthew Joseph Burt is a little suspicious, though. He says, Scambridge. Peggy has an angle. Do you reckon she is the she's the Ambridge Mafia? It's always the one you least suspect, isn't there? But also as well, a big hi to Pete Liggins, because this was his first ever post on our Facebook page, and it was a really good one. He said, hi all, first time poster after finding the podcast online. I thought Peggy had promised all her money to Tom when she dies and her house to Helen. She told everyone a few years back, and it led to a big fallout with Pat and Tony that only got patched up when he was trampled by that bull. Igor, was it? Igor? The scriptwriters have remembered. I am looking forward to hearing Sausage Boy's reaction that his inheritance is being spent. Yeah, I think this is because we've always said on Dumpty Dum, the Archers isn't just about what's happening now. It's about the inheritance, isn't it? It's about who's going to get what later on. And I think there may be trouble ahead, thanks to Peggy. But we shall see. Also, as well, my predictions normally completely wrong. we also talked about Josh this week. Josh and the hens, and Josh in general. It was, you know, whose side you on? Was Josh in the right? Is Josh just awful? Well, it was interesting because Robin Winning said, David and Josh have a toxic relationship, but I am 100% team Josh. He has drive, ambition, and David is doing everything in his power to keep him down. Josh needs to move to America and start an Uber for chickens or something. Well, that put a whole new slant on the joke. Why did the chicken cross the road? It didn't. It just called an Uber. So, yes, I don't know, really. But Ruth Pearl said, what Josh did was wrong, a bad error, but I really dislike how David and Ruth react to Josh in comparison to how they treat Pip. And this was a thing that really came out on this thread, which is, yeah, okay, Josh has done something bad, it's wrong, you know, God rest the chickens. But, you know, they're really harsh on him, aren't they? Hayley Stack said, I feel a bit sad for Josh when he told Jill. He did seem genuinely upset and felt sorry for what he had done. Mm. And I have to say, I'm not sure why David was marching around the farm with a bag of chicken bits. Not really necessary, was it? Yeah, I think he was just doing it for effect. Though Franklin Habits, and I think this might be one of my comments of the week, just simply said in this thread, I wish a fox would eat Shula. That did make me laugh, Franklin. What else have we been talking about? We talked a little bit about Jill and what she said at the end of the week with her saying, look, we just need to support Liz, no matter how futile what she's doing is, just need to kind of give her love and support. And we asked the question, is she right? Now, Joanne Smith, I think this was a really insightful comment, Joanne. She said, it's actually nice, a nice change to hear someone in Ambridge listen to what a family member says they need and try to fulfil that request. Too often a character says, I want X, and a well-meaning relative says, no, you don't mean that. You really want Z. And foists upon the person who asks for something completely different.
Yeah.
I don't think David, etc., need to lie to Elizabeth and say they agree with her, but they can make her feel supported by giving her a long list of solicitors they've talked to and the replies they've gotten. I think that's a really measured and great post there. I think that really got to the heart of the matter. But anyway, on to the big thing of the week. Board games. We had the most amount of comments about this because I posted the question, where do we all stand on board games? Because personally, I love them and I'm definitely a bit of a board game geek. And also I posted it because it was quite a slow episode, really. I was struggling to know what to post. Well, it was interesting. First of all, I want a big shout out to Dan Heller because I didn't even know this existed. There is an Archers board game. It's The Archers, a board game, and it's subtitled The Ambridge Action, Answering and Acting Game. Well, my letter to Santa this year, top of the list. So thank you, Dan, for bringing that to our attention. Glyn Fuller Love said, I like board games, just not on the radio. Yeah, you can't really get the measure of them on the radio, can you really? Our very own Andrew Horn said, it depends on the game. I refuse to play Monopoly as it always ends in a row. Though I did love Escape from Colditz. Was just as happy being the guard or the escapee. We would make a game last for days over Christmas. So did us and our family. We used to play Escape from Colditz. God, we used to get it going on past Boxing Day sometimes. And, you know, like I said, my family likes a good board game. Though, of course, there was that time that my mum insisted that she play, my elderly mother insisted that she play Cards Against Humanity with us. Yeah, I'm still kind of in therapy over that. Let's not talk about it. Rhoda Humphreys also said, board games were the cornerstone of my childhood and my children's childhood. And even though they are grown up, I still buy a new one every Christmas. I'll be looking for Escape to Atlantis. Or maybe we should develop an Archers game. Escape from the Laurels. Or maybe Escape from the Young Offenders Institution. Yes. Well, it turns out there is one. But maybe we need a Dumpty Dum board game. Also, I'd like to take this opportunity to say something. An official apology. I did suggest in this post that Royfield's Map Corner might not be the most interesting thing in the world.
What?
Well, it turns out the public opinion is against me. People love Map Corner.
Oh, my God's sake.
I just don't get it myself. But anyway, if Roy feels happy, it keeps him off the streets. Anyway, that is the social media roundup for the week. I think it was quite a quiet week in some ways in Ambridge. Maybe it'll be busier next week. I mean, we've got to find out what Liz is going to do when that deadline happens. So let's see. Anyway, I'm off to play a game of Risk with my family. I always lose this one. They always seem to take Europe. Anyway, enough of this. Enough of board games. We've digressed too much. So, you have the lovely Millie Bell next week. And so, have a great week. Okay, bye.
Lucy.
Yes.
Why is everybody taking pot shots at my little map corner? Dare I say it, right, just before you answer, I kind of feel, right, and I feel uncomfortable putting myself in this position, but I feel like you know, those Brexiteers, and they've been like really quite smug. And then there's like, there's forever people saying, we need a people's vote, we need a people's vote. We've had Andrew Horn try and get people up on Twitter against Matt Corner. Ditto Greavesy joined in. And now on Facebook, we've got Yokel Bear trying to rile people up as well. But the people keep speaking, don't they? Why do people hate Matt Corner?
Because it's really boring and it's on the radio and we can't see what you're talking about.
Isn't that the point, no?
Some people are map people and some people are not map people. And I am not a map people, so there we are.
You're not a map people, not a map person. Right. No, but like, isn't it just a little bit? I know it isn't necessarily funny because I don't bring the jokes to this whole kit and caboodle, right? But isn't it just, it's the extra eccentricity of the whole thing. That's the whole point. And so many people get it. I can't believe the amount I get tweeted hashtag map corner with stuff all the time. People get it. It's just bonkers. That is the point. And it's not as if I push it down people's throats every week. It's like once every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So why?
And everyone goes, ugh.
But not everyone doesn't know. There's a silent majority that...
I think the people that do go, are the very articulate ones. That's what happens.
So are you saying that Witherspoon's not articulate? Because he sends me maps. What about Miriam?
Does he? Oh, dear, I take it back.
Right. Purple Pumpkin, Celebrating Adam, Nissy, Live Spirit.
Oh, I don't know. I just hate it. I'm Titian willing to accept
very articulate. Dan Lord, Catherine Rowan-Jones, and Amelia. Like, they all do it. Karen Cunningham.
Honestly, I don't mind about it because I just sit here
like
and check
an elitist.
My emails. I just sit here and check my emails while you go witching on about it. But it's when you try and make me involved and say, try and guess which country has got the biggest concentration of yogurt pots or something. What is the whole point?
That's the whole point. Right. Okay. So got this map, right? And it's from Dan Lord.
You can do it again.
From Dan Law, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Guess which country is, it's a map of Europe, and it's every country in the European Union is the best at. Right? So which country has fewest divorces? So best at keeping marriages going, I presume then.
Germany.
Ireland, got that wrong. Germany, Germans are the happiest with employment. Okay, last one on this. Which country has the lowest obesity rate?
Japan.
In the European Union.
Oh. Croatia.
Good guess, France. Now, and then just very, 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 very last one. And this is, isn't this fun? Isn't this fun,
no.
Lucy?
No, I'm opening my post.
Which country in Europe has the lowest cocaine use?
Ooh.
Exactly. I thought that'd pique your interest.
France again.
No. Romania.
Ah.
There you go. That piqued your middle class interest, didn't it? Like coke around the dinner table and all that. Anyway, so it's just lovely and fun and it's going to be interactive. But you know what though, right? My 52% of listeners... Right, we're going to swan off and have our own podcast called Map Corner.
Yay! When are you off? Don't let the door hit you up the arse on the way out.
You know what? You'll miss us when we're gone. You really will. You really will. So rude. Anyway, give us some tweets, will you?
Yes. Where are we? Paul Salotti. Did I really just hear a dog fouling scene? Now that's radio. John 21. This Jill Josh conversation couldn't be less gripping if it were between a speak your weight machine and a sat nav. Dominic Young. Poor Josh. But when life hands you dead chickens, start frying chips. Matt Underwood. It's an all male one this week, by the way. Matt Underwood. That's to fit in with Roy Field's misogyny. Matt Underwood. Tom's idea of flirting is sending a link to an article on orchard management. If there's any justice in the world, he'll die alone. It's a bit harsh, Matt. And tweet of the week. comes from Phil Robinson. Here she is, Hannah, the Archer's answer to Eva Braun.
That's harsh.
Oh, dear.
That's very harsh. Right, folks. Map Corner got brought in a little bit early because there's a concerted concerted campaign against it, folks. Now, if you are a Carterphile like myself,
that's what I was marching against. You see, when everyone else was doing the march for Europe, I was marching against Map
I
Corner.
Need you to show your displeasure at these heathens by hashtag Map Cornering me even more maps. And boy, oh boy, did I have a lot recently. We could just stop it.
Sorry.
Now, Dan Lord, you sent in a most excellent map, sir. All right. It's absolutely fascinating. Lucy, guess what this is? It's a map of the world, right? And it tells you what plug is used in every country, and it's color-coded.
Oh.
Yeah. No, oh, come on, you travel. You travel quite a bit, right? So that's got to be of use to you. So you know that our good old-fashioned British plugs, we can use them in China or the Sudan or Nigeria or Kenya, Uganda, Zambia, Zimbabwe and Malaysia or even Myanmar. And actually, I can confirm Malta, right? But those silly American plugs, you can only use them in America, Canada, Mexico, Peru, Colombia and Japan. And the Philippines. So thank you for that, Dan Lord. Awesome, practical, useful map. And people deride Map Corner and say, you know, no use comes out of it. Absolutely, really useful stuff does come out of it. I'm just quickly looking through my list. I tell you what you get, Lucy. You get, if somebody sends in like a popular map, right, then you get two or three people sending it in. And there's a couple around this theme. Now, Blythe Spirit sent in the map of procrastination. So mountains of distraction, lake of coffee break, social media forest, online shopping, COVID. So you're laughing. I heard that.
No.
Sudden urge to do Laundry Valley, that type of thing. So thank you for that, Blythe Spirit. And did also get that from somebody else as well, because that was just like really kind of quite good and funny. Catherine Rowan Jones, who we know is a linguist, she can speak many languages, sent in a great map showing the world's most popular common languages and where they are spoken, but by the size of the speakers of that language. And of course, we know that we just kind of presume that English is the most common language in the world, and actually isn't it kind of Chinese with its Mandarin or Cantonese and stuff. So thank you for that, Catherine. Now there's also, oh yes, and then from Witherspoon sent in the Indigenous Peoples of North America. I like that. I've got a soft spot for the Indigenous Peoples of North America, being in part one myself. Titian and Aurora, Fanny Pants and Blythe Spirit also sent in the Itchy Feet map, which is every European city, which has its postcardy old town bit, its World War II Memorial Avenue, hipster home of brickworks, all that kind of stuff, which Blythe Spirit and I entered into a little bit of a backwards and forwards about that, because me saying, it's not quite Birmingham because we don't do bridges and stuff and whatever. But anyway, folks, what I am going to do, and I'm speaking to a new podcast host about this. I'm going to do Map Corner, the podcast. And it's going to be somewhat different in that you, the listener, will be able, somewhat similar to Dumdy Dum, you'll be able to get on your phones and talk about an interesting map or geographic anomaly that you've seen. And then the whole idea is that they'll automatically just go on the show through this little bit of tech. And then each week I'll take out one map and then speak to an expert about why this map is unique or special. And actually the first one, Lucy, is so somebody sent me a map some time ago about Papua New Guinea. And Papua New Guinea is very unique in that it's a relatively small country. but it has the most amount of indigenous languages. I think there's over 1,000 different languages spoken in Papua New Guinea. So I sent an email a couple of weeks ago to the Papua New Guinean consulate to get a speaker, and they're sorting me out somebody who can talk to me about why there are so many languages in Papua New Guinea. So that will be the subject of the first episode. There'll be one expert talking about Papua New Guinea and its linguistic diversity, which we will show on map form. And the whole point is with Map Corner is that to talk about maps on a podcast is somewhat ridiculous. And that's the whole point. And it's eccentric and it's very English and to you, Lucy. Right now, dumdydum.com, go there. It's got a shop. It's awesome. Right. And occasionally it does actually work. The forum's got a little smattering of life. Let's keep it going. Why don't you say some other stuff?
What?
You could talk about Patreon or...
Oh, yes. You can sponsor us on Patreon for about $2 a week. And you pay at the end of the month, so it doesn't come out every week, which would be quite annoying. And then it means that we can pay to keep doing this thing because all our technology collapses on a daily basis and Royfield spends inordinate amounts of time trying to fix it all at once, which is like rushing around trying to nail jelly to a wall at the moment. So, yes, if any of you could help with a bit of cash, that would be gratefully received. Thank you.
And I just want to say... next week, we will go through people who have written reviews in the last 6 months. There was a time back at the start. Do you remember, Lucy, the good old days? Do you remember in the good old days when we actually used to like each other? Right. We actually were quite warm towards each other. We didn't just like continue, just like communicate via WhatsApp. We actually pick up the phone and go, hello, how are you?
That's only because WhatsApp hadn't been invented.
That's
then.
True. It's such a long time ago. But we used to say to people, write reviews, and we used to give a massive long list of them at the start of each show. Now we just kind of relegate that to the end of the show, maybe like 3-4 times a year. But we've got quite a few people to thank, and Jezebel, you're going top of that list. You're going to be thanked first, Jezebel. But no, seriously, folks, please write us a review on Apple iTunes, because that way we get more people to listen to the show. It helps our... algorithmic rankings on that platform. Now, you don't have to be a member of iTunes to write us a review, though. Quite simply, all you do is you just go on, just sign up, and then you just write a review. However, if you are allergic to all things Apple, what you can do is write us a review on a podcatcher of your choice, if it's Overcast or whatever the heck you use, or Stitch or whatever. But please write us a review, because it does help more people to find the show. Now, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our website, which is www.com, or you can call us on 02030313105 to leave us a message. On social media, specifically Twitter, you can find me, where I am at Royfield. Lucy can be found at
Lucy V. Freeman.
And collectively, together with Yokel Bear and with Robert, we are at Dumdydum. And of course, you can find us on Facebook.
Can I read you today's comedy headline from The Mirror? You know, last week it was about the bucket.
Oh, yes, please.
This today's is: woman popped her stitches after smelling rancid chicken breasts brought at Iceland.
That is good. That's all levels of genius. Have you ever thought of writing for The Mirror?
There's no way I could. That level of fiction, I could. There's no way I have the imagination.
But there is such a fine line, isn't there? Because when you get to the star and the sport, then they're not funny. Yeah. That is just like, it's just totally ridiculous.
That's like aliens land on the moon, whatever. Yeah. No, not aliens land on the moon. Or was it something supposed to land on the moon? Was it David Bowie or something? I can't remember.
Yes.
Or Princess Diana spotted on the moon or something like that. Yes. No, the funny ones are the ones that are to try and be po-faced about it.
Such as?
Well, like The Mirror.
Oh, yes. Sorry. So I think we're at the end of the show, and it's the time where a lot of people actually say is better than the main body of the show, Lucy, because they say that actually, you know, the presenters let their hair down.
The people that don't actually like The Archers, so quite what they're listening for, I don't know.
They'll sit through an whole hour of us chatting about it just to get to the bit where I go, any passing shots, Freeman?
I haven't, really.
Me either. because I've done my thing about Nazi pop. Tell you what they are doing on Business Wars at the moment. It's Napster versus the music industry. But we're only two episodes in. But so far, so good. Are you listening to Lexicon Valley?
No.
You know what? You, of all people, because you work with words and you understand them, you've really got to go, seriously, Lucy, apart from the fact that you absolutely learn stuff, is such an engaging host.
Oh, I have a. Sorry, this isn't the sat nav. This isn't the sat nav thing.
And he plays show tunes all the time as well. Very idiotic.
Yeah, well, I would like that.
Yeah, seriously, listen to him.
If anybody is short of something to listen to at the moment, they want an audiobook recommendation. Mm-hmm. And Michelle in New York, I am looking at you now. Download, go to audible.com. Audible hopes you've enjoyed this audiobook. Download Map and Lucia. There's a series of six books read by Miriam Margolyes, and they are absolutely brilliant. The books are by E.F. Benson. They've just been made into a drama series. They were made into a drama series here a couple of years ago. Not drama, it's a comedy series. But you would love, if you love Ambridge and you love P.G. Woodhouse and stuff like that, then you would love Map and Lucia. The first book is Miss Map, and it goes on from there. It's just wonderful. And Miriam Margolyes' reading is absolutely spot on. And I say that as a card-carrying member of the E.F. Benson Society, because that is the kind of rock and roll chick I am.
Just any other business, folks. I am meeting Nick today, and Nick is the person who put the idea in Lucy and I's noggin about going up to Brum to do Dumby Dum Live. Nick is the manager, the boss of Birmingham Town Hall, and we're putting in a date next year for there to be number two, version two of the Archers Weekend. So listen out for that date, if not next week, the week after. We're going to put it in super early because we want as many people as humanly possible to come, so you can plan your whole family holidays in and around, stress on the word around, the Dumby Dum Weekend, so you can get up and come. And that'd be awesome. Oh, and I even spoke to Angela Barnes yesterday, and she's going to come up, and she's going to do something. Yeah, she'll interview somebody for us. You know, a celeb or something or another. Or I do love her. She says hello, by the way. Her and her chap are buying a flat. She's writing a sitcom. And she's just finishing up with her Radio 4 Extra show. That's been really good this year. And she sounded in fine fettle.
Excellent.
Yes. Right. On that note, I think we should say goodbye, because I, as always, have nothing more to say. I've done my maps. I've asked people to write reviews, and that's me done. I will edit this, put it up, and we'll release another Dumby Dum into the wild. Awesome. Hit stop.
I like the idea of it releasing it into the wild. That's good.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.